The following is a home program given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on January 22, 2011, in Orange County, California, USA.
So, we have come to this human form of life after many, many millions of lifetimes in the cycle of birth and death. So, the great sages of India, they have very wisely informed us that we must utilize this life for realizing the actual nature of the self. Of all the millions of species of life, you see, it is only in this human form that we can actually understand who we are, where we have come from, what is our duty, what is our destination, and how we can achieve it. So if this human life is used only for animalistic activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, this is disaster. So the difficulty is, we live in a society which is materially very advanced, but spiritually they're nowhere, absolutely nowhere. The whole thing is based on economic development. Their whole culture is based on economic development. But can that economic development save you from old age, disease, and death? No, it cannot. So therefore, what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Mogashya mogakarmano mogyanavitestataha rakshasam masharing chaiva pakritam hanimshitaha. He says, those who are thus bewildered are attracted by atheistic and demoniac views, in that deluded condition. Their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. So this society is actually heading nowhere, you see. They're creating... 100 years ago, this is a beautiful, there was fresh air everywhere here, you see. Now it's polluted. This is clean. I just came from Lima, Peru. You think this is like clean air compared to there? It's so polluted, unbelievable. We polluted the rivers, we polluted the air. We're destroying our environment of this planet because we don't have the proper consciousness of seeing that God is the proprietor. We think that we're the proprietors and we can do whatever we want to with this energy here. It's a big mistake. It's a big, big mistake. This whole culture is based on fallacious principle of overlordship. And that man has dominion, so now... No. The Bible says God has given man over dominion over the beasts. There, they take that as a license that you can kill and eat the beasts. But don't the parents also have dominion over the children? Yes, of course they do. Dominion doesn't mean you have a right to exploit. Dominion means you have a duty to serve. So man has been given by his advanced intelligence some sort of dominion amongst all the species, you see. But that doesn't mean he has a right to exploit. No, it means he has a duty to protect. The parental dominion over the children means that it means greater responsibility. They have to protect the children. So similarly, the human beings have given stewardship over this planet. We have to protect this, all the resources here, and see that they're being used, nicely used in God's service. But what are we doing? We're denying God. We're celebrating the atheists. They say now that the biggest brain in the whole world, the greatest scientist, is Dr. Stephen Hawking. And Dr. Hawking says this universe came out of absolutely nothing. He's teaching atheism. He's being applauded as the greatest intellectual of the day. He wrote one book. He sold 10 million copies of his book. These people are now taking the leadership role and being accepted as the leaders on this planet. Atheistic people. who deny God's existence. To them, God is some kind of foolish joke. That's how he presents God, as some foolish mythology believed by less intelligent villager-type people who have no intelligence. That's how he describes God. But the difficulty is, this person is arrogant and proud. He doesn't even see the fallacy of his own logic. He says the universe comes out of absolutely nothing. But wait a minute, doesn't science mean you have to have an experiment? You have to prove your theory by doing an experiment? That's what science means. You do the experiments, you observe the results of the experiments, and you analyze the data, and from that data then you can derive a scientific theory based on your observations from the experiments. But where's the experiment of something coming out of nothing? Do we have any experience of something coming out of nothing? There's no experience. You see? This is completely mental speculation. We have no scientific evidence that something has ever come out of nothing. But yet this person who is being heralded as a great scientist is saying that everything came out of absolutely nothing. So this shows how the persons who are claiming to be the scientists, the leading intellectuals of the world, are not intelligent. Really, they're not intelligent. This person pulls a theory out of thin air because he wants to establish that he's the greatest scientist in the world. Actually, the idea is already there in Buddhism. Everything comes out of void. He's just borrowed from the Buddhists, and he gives it a scientific twist, and now he wants to be celebrated as discovering that everything comes out of nothing. So my point is, these are the people who are being accepted as the leading intellectuals, who are being honored and given prestigious positions by the political leaders. And who are getting covered in the media, etc. You see, these sort of persons are becoming more and more prominent. These atheistic sort of people are becoming more and more prominent. And religion is being relegated to some kind of superstition. And the children have to go through this in the school. This is what they're being exposed to in school. Darwin's theory is taught as fact. It's completely fabrication. There's no such thing as one species transforming into another species. But this is what the kids are being taught in school, you see. The children going to the public schools are being brainwashed with this atheistic propaganda. So it's very important that we don't just think, well, as long as my kids are making good grades in school, as long as I have money and everything is okay. It doesn't work that way. There has to be an awakening of higher consciousness. Otherwise, this economic development, material success is futile. The birds are also economically successful. They build their nest, they get their worms, they bring them home every night for the wife and the kids. They're economically successful. So if all you're doing is making a nice house, getting some money and bringing it home, you're not successful. You're not successful unless you actually awaken your dormant love of God within the heart. Because only that's going to save you from the cycle of birth and death. Only that will save you. Your money won't save you. Your house won't save you. Your college degree won't save you. Your Toyota or your Mercedes won't save you. It's only one thing that's going to save you. And that is how much you've actually developed love of God within your heart. So the sages of India, they are the leading thinkers in the history of the world. They are the greatest scientists, actually. They already knew the material world in full detail. And it's not that important. The material world is only 1/4 portion of God's creation. But the 3/4 portion, that is at least 3 times more important. And that, they don't even know, the scientists don't even know that it exists. So the great thinkers of India, Vedavyas, Narad Muni, Madhvacharya, Vishnuswami, Ramanujacharya, Nimbarka, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you see, so many, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. These great, great acharyas are showing us, actually the 12 original acharyas are given in the Bhagavatam. The 12 original great Mahajanas, they're given there. Svayambhur Nadadashambhu Kumara Kapilo Manu Pralado Janako Bhishma Balirvaya Sakirviam. These are the greatest, these are called the Mahajanas. That is Lord Brahma, Narad Muni, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila Dev, Svayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janak Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, and Bali Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, and Yamaraj. These are the 12 great authorities, you see. If you want to know who the great thinkers are, the great scientists, then you must study about these 12 Mahajanas. You see. These people like Darwin and Hawking, they come and they go. They'll be forgotten very soon. And their names will be forgotten in history. But these 12 great Mahajanas, they will forever be remembered. So we need to study what these great Mahajanas, of the knowledge they've given us. We have to understand this knowledge. Our children have to be educated in this science. You see? Otherwise this money is useless. It's simply useless. This material opulence. If we use it in Krishna's service, it's very good. We're not against opulence. I'm using the latest technology in MP3 recorders, record these lectures and put them on the internet. We're not against modern technology. We're saying that's great. Use modern technology, but understand who it belongs to. You understand who is the actual proprietor, you see. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 5, text number 29. Bhagdaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam kyatvamam shantum richati. Only that person who knows me as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme owner, and the best friend of all living entities can have peace of mind. Nobody else can have peace of mind. And that we've seen it. In spite of all of their money, their power, their prestige, they have no peace of mind. Therefore, they go to drugs, they go to alcohol, they go to illicit sexual activities, they go to all sorts of hedonistic activities, trying to find peace of mind, and they never get it. The more they agitate their senses, the more they become disturbed. Actual peace of mind, Krishna knows exactly what he's talking about. He's the supreme authority. He's the source of all existence. Krishna has made it very clear that if you want peace of mind, you have to understand who is Krishna. Not so. If you understand who Krishna is, you'll have peace of mind. That Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. That means whatever I do, is it for my enjoyment? No, it's for Krishna's enjoyment. Whatever I do, actually it is meant for Krishna's pleasure. You see? If I try to enjoy separately from Krishna, what will happen? Take the example of the hand and the belly. You see? Now, how does the hand get the nourishment it needs? By squeezing the rice in the fingers? No. How does the hand get the nourishment it needs? Do you know? Can you tell me? What did he say, David?
He's saying they eat.
By eating? How does it, when it eats, where does it put the food?
In the stomach.
That's right. Very good. Well, the hand gets nourishment by giving the food stuff to the belly. And then the belly distributes the nutrition throughout the entire body. So the hand, the belly is the enjoyer, you see. In all the other parts of the body, they serve the belly. In the Vedas, there is a story about the parts of the body in relationship with the belly. And the parts of the body thought, what is this nonsense? Here we are working to serve this belly, and all that belly does is sit there and enjoy. It doesn't do any work. We do all the work and the belly enjoys. So they decided to form a labor union. And they went on strike. They got their signs, you know, they're marching back and forth. Don't feed the belly, don't feed the belly. The belly is a fascist pig, don't feed the belly. They were chanting their slogans. And they're very adamantly going on with their strike. We're not going to feed the belly anymore. So they were very enthusiastic the first day of their strike. The second day, somehow they were losing their energy. Don't feed the belly. Don't feed the belly. They were getting a little weak, you see. The third day, they was like, don't feed the belly. Don't feed the belly. And with the last little energy they had, they said, I think we should call a meeting of the labor union. And they took a vote, should we feed the belly? And everybody said, yes, I think we better feed the belly. So they lost all their energy, you understand? Because they weren't feeding the belly. So Krishna is the belly, you see. He is meant, everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. Everything is meant for his enjoyment. And if you try to enjoy separately from Krishna, you're like the hand squishing the rice in the fingers. How much nutrition are you going to get squishing the rice in your fingers? Zero nutrition. Nothing. You won't get you won't even get one tiny fraction of a bit of nutrition by squeezing the rice in your fingers. You try it. If you don't believe me, just try it. Make an experiment. Tonight, don't eat. You don't feed your belly. Just squeeze it in your fingers and see if you get satisfied. You see, you won't get satisfied. That's the thing. Therefore, Krishna says, Bhogdaram Jagatapasam. Everything is for my enjoyment. You should, you say, well, why, Krishna? If you may ask him, well, why do you say it's for your enjoyment? And then he says, Sarvaloka Maheshvaram, because I am the owner. Oh, isn't it a fact? If you own, just like you own this house, you see, or there's a bank on it still. Anyway, you know what I mean. You own it with the bank. It's you and the bank together. But because you're the owner, you have the right to enjoy. If you come home one day and you find some family has moved in, you go out, you go to the temple one Sunday and you come back Sunday night and you found that somebody else moved into your house. They say, we wanted to enjoy your house, but you can't enjoy it. I'm the owner, therefore I'm the one who gets to enjoy this house. You can call the police and say, I have some people, they moved into my house. They said they want to enjoy my house. You see, because you're the owner, you're the rightful enjoyer. So Krishna then explains why Bhoktadam Jagatam, because Sarvaloka Maheshvaram, because I am the owner of everything, therefore I am enjoyer of everything. So if you want to be the enjoyer of something, you have to be the owner. If you're not the owner and you try to enjoy, you're a criminal. You see, you're a criminal. So the difficulty is with the modern civilization, we want to enjoy the property of God. Actually, the Archbishop of Canterbury, which is in England, he's the leader of the Catholic, Church of England, he very nicely stated in this way. He said, we want to have the kingdom of God without God, and we cannot have it. You see, it's a very good statement the Archbishop of Canterbury made. We want to enjoy what is God's property and tell God to get lost. We don't need you, we just want your kingdom. Is it? So this doesn't work. This is what the modern day society is trying to do. They want to kick out God. They want to enjoy through technology. But if you take that technology, you take God away, then the whole thing becomes more and more chaotic, you see. All the bad karma, and then become all the sins, you see. They wonder, why did we deserve to have this big attack on the World Trade Center, you see? Why all these people got killed in the World Trade Center? But those people, they were sending their own mother, the cow, to the slaughterhouse to be tortured and murdered, you see? their own mother, the cow. They were sending the slaughterhouse to be tortured and murdered. So now they're tortured and murdered, you see, in their place of work. They go to work on a normal day and they're tortured and murdered in their own place of work. You see, this is karma. When we don't see that God is the owner and we try to be the enjoyers, we say, well, it's whatever I want to enjoy. If I want to eat meat, I'll go to McDonald's. There's no problem. It's my life. It's my money. I can do what I want. Well, you're violating the laws of nature, the laws of God, and you will pay the price, you see. So as a society, we are paying the price for acting in defiance of the laws of God. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is the most important institution on this entire planet. Because we are giving education, we are giving knowledge how to solve the problems of the world by putting God back in the center. That everything has to be for the enjoyment of the Lord, you see. So this is the most important movement. And we're very happy to see how this family, we're visiting Ishvara Puri Prabhu and his wife, how they so nicely have taken up Prabhupada's mission. We're very happy to see a Krishna conscious family, because this is what we need on the planet. More and more families like this, and then all the world's problems will be solved. Every house on this street should be should have Radha and Krishna, or Gornitai, Jagannath. Every house we should have worship of Krishna going on in the kirtan, you see. That is the day when there'll be happiness again on this planet. When the crime will go away, the terrorism will go away, the air pollution, the water pollution, the economic crisis. All of these things are simply reactions, sinful reaction for cow killing and other sin. It's all karma. All the difficulties, it's simply the fact we're not acting in harmony with the laws of God. What does the Isha Upanishad say? Isha vasham idam sarvam yat kinchab jagatam jagat tena chakchena bunjita magridakasha svidhanam. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept for himself only those things which is set aside as his quota, knowing well to whom everything belongs. So what is our quota? Whatever we can engage in Krishna's service. That's all. Whatever we can engage in Krishna's service, that is our allotted quota. So I'm very happy to see that they're in this house is so nicely engaged. Everywhere Krishna and Prabhupada is here, I see. Everywhere I see Krishna and Krishna's devotees. It's very nice, you see. Prabhupada's books prominently displayed here. It's very nice, you see. This is how to take whatever God has given you and then offer it back to the Lord. And you know what the Lord will do? When you take everything that you have and you offer Him, He'll give you even more. He wants that His devotees should actually have the whole world. He wants that His devotees should have the whole world. So whatever God has given you, simply engage that in His service. Whatever talent He has given you, whatever opulences, whatever properties, whatever He has given you, simply engage that in the service of the Lord and He will give you more and more and more and more. The reason we're finding difficulty, economic problems in the world today is because we're not using the wealth in His service. Where does Lakshmi like to stay? Away from Narayan or with Narayan? If you tell Lakshmi she must give up Narayan, that we're going to kill Narayan and just take you alone, what will she do? She will not agree. The modern day society, you want to kill Narayan and we'll just take Lakshmi. We'll just take the goddess of fortune. We just want the wealth and we don't want God, you see. Kill God and take Lakshmi. That's like Ravana. Kidnap Sita, you see. So Ravana was destroyed by Ram. So this modern day society, it's a Ravana society. They want Sita, they want Lakshmi, they don't want Ram or Narayan, you see. But if we, the devotees of the Lord, you see, if we want to, whatever Lakshmi or wealth we have gotten, we want to engage that in Krishna's service, then our wealth will never be taken away and Krishna will give us more and more wealth, you see. So this is the secret of success. The Birla family knew this in India, that's why they built so many temples. They had all that, all those rupees, those crores and crores of rupees. So now let's open, spend it on opening temples. You see, they were very intelligent. The Birlas, you see, very intelligent. So whatever opulence you have, you use that in Krishna's service. Don't hoard it and think, I earned it, it's mine. Never think that way. Never, ever, ever think, I earned it and it's mine. It's a big mistake. How did you earn it? Who gave you the ability to earn it? That is all God's gift. The intelligence, the physical strength, everything is God's gift. And what is it anyway? The money itself has no value. What do we actually need? We need food, we need air, we need shelter, we need clothing. Those things are all God's gift. Can you eat money? Can you take take some dollar bills and cut off, make a salad and eat it and get nutrition out of it? No way. That food is the gift of God. Did a scientist invent the food? Did a scientist invent water and air and soil that nourishes the food? Did a scientist invent that? Did Stephen Hawking give us that? Did Charles Darwin give us those things? No. These are the gift of God. Whatever you require for your health, that is all God's gift. It is not manufactured by the grocery store doesn't manufacture it. The farmer doesn't manufacture it. He simply harvests it. So we have to have some common sense and actually see what's going on this planet and understand where we need to put our priorities. Otherwise, there's no way we can be happy. I guarantee you, we will not be happy. In the time of death, we won't be very Krishna conscious either. And we'll be able to take breath again. If we try to enjoy separately from God, that mentality will go with us to the time of death. And then we'll have to take breath again. We'll be forced by our own desires to take breath again in the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, the intelligent person, he carefully studies the Bhagavad Gita. He says, from now on, I'm going to strictly follow the Bhagavad Gita principles in my daily life at every minute. Whether I'm at home, whether I'm at work, whether I'm at school, whether I'm commuting, or the temple, wherever it might be, I'm going to follow the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. So everyone should carefully study Bhagavad Gita as it is. We have the best edition in the world, Bhagavad Gita as it is, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Why the best? Because his commentary gives you the proper understanding based on the teachings of all the greatest acharyas of India, all condensed into one book. If you will carefully study Bhagavad Gita as it is and apply it in your life, you'll become the most happy person you could ever imagine. You'll become so happy. So happy. So successful in life. Just by accepting the principles of the Bhagavad Gita and sincerely trying to apply them. It doesn't matter if you're a young kid. Actually, the younger you are, the more important is you take it up immediately. You know why? Because youth is the time for learning. That's why they have you in school right now. You two young boys here. The younger you are, the more easily you can learn things. There's an old, what's that saying? You can't teach an old dog new tricks. The younger you are, the better brain you have for learning. Therefore, especially in youth, that's why in the Vedic culture, brahmachari from the age of 5 to 20 is brahmachari life. It's student life to study the Vedic wisdom. So you boys, you must study these books regularly. You must study these books regularly. Bhagavad Gita. You must become very familiar with Bhagavad Gita. If you want to get full advantage of your youth, otherwise, you know, you're missing a golden opportunity. Because if in the young age you carefully study these scriptures, that knowledge will go with you through your whole life. Your whole life. I was fortunate, of course not in the very youth, because I hadn't met my spiritual master, but I was fortunate as a young man in my 20s to be able to seriously dedicate myself to this pathway. So now I'm a senior citizen in my 60s. So 40 years ago, I began this. This became my full-time activity, Krishna consciousness movement. So I was very much blessed by Srila Prabhupada. So I'm just trying to share with you all, because I know that I may never see you again. But this may be my only one meeting with you in my whole life. So I just wanted to give you the understanding. I wanted to share with you what I've realized after 40 years of practicing Krishna consciousness. Everything that I've realized, I want to try to put it all in one 20-minute talk, so I can share with you the mercy that I've gotten from Prabhupada in the most powerful, effective way. So I hope that something has gotten through to you from what I've said. I hope it made some sense to you, why you should take up Krishna consciousness as your only duty in life. And whatever else you're doing, do it for Krishna. If you're a student, do it for Krishna. If you're a housewife, do it for Krishna. You're a professional or a businessman. Whatever you're doing, do it for Krishna. Because at the end, all you can have is your Krishna consciousness. In the end, everything you must give up. By nature's lot, everything will be taken away. Everything will be taken away from you. But there's one thing you get to keep, whatever amount of Krishna consciousness you have cultivated in your life, that will go with you. That will carry you to your next situation. So understand that, you know, making money, becoming popular, becoming famous, becoming strong, these things, you can use them. It's okay. You can use, but use them for cultivating Krishna consciousness. Use them for developing Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, as Bhagavatam says, Shama Eva Kevalam, it's simply useless waste of time. Useless waste of time. So I've been speaking now for 31 minutes. Do you all have any questions? Anyone have some questions? You have a question?
On behalf of all the guests? Yeah. Because sometimes the Indians, especially in Indians, they worship all the kinds and they think that's all right.
Worship who?
All the different demigods.
All the demigods.
And they think that they are doing what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we have to take Krishna consciousness?
And I'm worshipping different gods, so why Krishna? I mean, he's just another one of the gods. Yeah, that's very common in India. It's very common in India. So, first of all, then why does demigod worship even exist? I mean, there's different ways we could look at it. Actually, demigod worship is for those who are not on the highest level of worshipping for getting relief from material existence. For those who want to continue in material existence and try to get some facility in material existence, demigod worship is there. But in demigod worship, when it is properly done, one must also worship Vishnu along with the demigod worship. And this is to give the demigod worshiper the understanding that why am I worshiping Vishnu along with the demigod? And then he finds out that actually Vishnu is the one who's providing whatever the demigod is giving you. The demigod is just a middleman. He's not the original supplier. Eko bahunam yovadadati kaman. The one supreme lord is actually the one who's supplying everything. The demigod is just that middleman. So the intelligent person thinks, well, why am I worshipping a middleman? Why don't I go straight to the supplier himself, you see? Just like, what is that company? Walmart. You see, how did Walmart become so successful? Instead of going to the middleman, some distributor to buy the retail goods, they went straight to the manufacturers and got the rock bottom price, you see. That's how Walmart became so successful. They cut out the middleman. So demigod, they're middlemen. They're not the original providers. They're middlemen. They're distributors on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So why go to a middleman where you don't get as good of a deal? Why not go to the original supplier? That's where you get the best deal. So demigod, therefore Krishna says, Kamaistai star hidigyana prapadyantanya devata tam tam niyamashtaya pakritanya tasvaya. He says, those who are less intelligent, they worship the demigods. States right there in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text number 20. He clearly states the demigod worshippers are less intelligent people. And then again, he repeats the same, very similar point in the same chapter, text number 23. Antavattu palam tesham tadbhavat yalpamedisham devan devijo yanti madbhakti madbhakta mangyanti mamapi. He says, men of small intelligence. What is the Sanskrit? Alpa medasa. Alpa means meager. And you know what medasa means? You know what medasa means? You know? Medasa is the Sanskrit word for intelligence. You see? So alpa means meager, and medasa means intelligence. He says, antavattu palam tesham tadvabal yalpa medasam. He says, men of small intelligence worship the demigods and their fruits are limited and temporary. You know what that means? You understand what that means? If you worship a demigod, you get like, you know, Indra, Ganesh, Surya, etc., Durga, you get some temporary benefit. It means it doesn't last forever. It's a short-term benefit. He says, unintelligent men, or men of small intelligence worship the demigods and their fruits are limited and temporary. He says, the worshippers of the demigods go to the planets of the demigods. Did you know that there's two different worlds, the material world and the spiritual world? Did you know them? Do you know where the demigods have their planets? Where? In the material world. So, if you worship a demigod, then you go to the planet of the demigod, but that planet is a temporary planet. It's like saying, I want you to work really hard. I'm going to buy a house in a neighborhood over here. And oh, by the way, you know, the city's going to tear down the neighborhood in 5 years from now. The city's going to tear down the whole neighborhood. They're not going to pay any compensation to the owners. They're just going to come in and steal your property and tear down the houses. Would you like to buy a house in that neighborhood? Well, that's demigod worship. You're going to go to the planet of the demigod, but when Mahavishnu inhales, that planet is completely obliterated, and all the sacrifices and yagyas you did to get to that planet is just completely wasted. Shama eva kevalam. You see? Therefore, those who are actually intelligent, even if you have all material desires, you see. The Bhagavatam says like that. He says, akama sarvakama va moksha kama udaradi. Whether you have all material desires, whether you want to merge into Brahman, or whether you want bhakti. And there's three different categories of people, you see. There's those who want all material desires fulfilled. That's called kama, lust. There's those who want moksha, who want to merge into God, merge into the oneness. They consider God to be the oneness. That's called moksha. Moksha kamis. The kamis are those who desire lust, those who desire moksha, moksha kami. And then there's sarva kami, those who want all lusty desires fulfilled. Those who want moksha, moksha kami. And then there's akamis, that's the devotees. They want to give up all material desire. So Bhagavatam says, no matter what your category, if you want, you have all desire for material things, you want to merge into Brahman, or you want bhakti, no matter what you want, go to Krishna. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushangparam. Whatever you want, you go to Krishna and worship Krishna, because that's the one he's the one who actually provides everything. So the intelligent persons that are good, even if they don't want bhakti, they want money, they want power and fame, still they're advised to worship Krishna. Because he's the one who provides all those things. And those who are even more intelligent, you see, they say, I'm going to Krishna, I should find out what is the best thing you can give me. Everybody knows the story of, you know the story of Dhruva? Yeah. He wanted a kingdom greater than his father's.
What about the adults? Do they know?
I like the youth. If the youth are educated, then our future is more bright. I especially want to see the youth are educated.
Adults also, I think.
All us oldies, we're going to be dead and gone before you know it. These kids are going to be the world leaders. And the adults will hear and they'll get benefited also. You think the adults are not hearing? They're very eager to see what happens to the youth.
Yes.
The adults are all being educated at the same time. Actually, this is my technique for educating the adults, because you all need to hear this too. But I want these boys to feel especially important, because they are the future leaders. Well, I want the parents to see how these children should be educated properly. Not simply how to get an engineering degree. You did the engineering degree, that's fine. We're all in favor of you beginning your engineering degree or becoming a lawyer, doctor. That's fine, that's great, do it. But understand that is secondary. That's what you have to understand, that is secondary business. Your primary business is to know what is the absolute truth. The Absolute is Krishna, and I'm His eternal servant. I have to develop my loving relationship with Him. If that education is not given to your children, you're murdering your own children. I'll be very heavy and frank. That's my duty as a spiritual master, to be heavy. So if I'm heavy, that's my duty. Please don't think badly. It's my duty to be heavy. Prabhupada ordered me to be a spiritual master, and it's my duty to be heavy. What can I do? If you don't educate your children to become pure devotees of Krishna, you're murdering them, actually. You're murdering them. So we are trying to train everyone how to become the pure devotees of Krishna. Because this is our duty in life. This is what Krishna wants. If we don't try to develop pure love for Him, practically we're not even human beings. We're just animals. So our Vedic culture says, do not remain in the darkness of animal life. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. Don't remain an animal in the darkness of ignorance, simply making money, trying to get some degree and some prestige in society. Don't waste your time like that. Use that, do it secondarily, but primarily you must cultivate knowledge of the Absolute Truth and develop your loving relationship with that Supreme Person who is the Absolute Truth, Krishna or Vishnu. So does that answer your question? Okay. Anything else?
I see worshipping up all the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna, Jagannath, Balabhadra, they have same benefits, right? You worship any of the expansion of the Krishna.
What is he saying, David?
You can worship any of the expansion of Krishna as well.
Worshipping any expansion of Krishna, expansions of Krishna.
Yes, the category is called Vishnu Tattva. That is the Supreme Personality of God in any one of His millions and billions of forms. They are summarized in the Dasavatar Sutra. The Dasavatar. There are 10 primary. So, any one of these forms can be worshipped. Narayan, Vishnu, Nrsingadev, Lord Ram. Krishna is the original form of all of these forms of Godhead. He's the original form. The opulence of God are full and complete in Krishna. They are... In Lord Narayan, they're 96% complete. There are certain opulences that Narayan does not show that are shown by Krishna. Narayan doesn't play the flute, for example. But still, he's the personality of Godhead. He's just in it, acting in a different capacity. It's like, for example, there may be some company, or the big CEO of that company, you see. So you're an employee. You know him at the office. You have a nice relationship as one of his employees in the office. But at home, he's the same person, but he's a different person. It's a whole different relationship, those who know him at home. If you know him at the office, that's one thing. You know him at home, it's another thing. There, it's more relaxed, more casual, more intimate. So those who know God at the office, they are the Vishnu Bhaktas, Narayan Bhaktas. Those who know God at home, they are the Krishna Bhaktas. Same person. Krishna and Narayan and Vishnu, they're the same person. But that Supreme Person is just wearing different hats, you can say. He's showing different sides of his Supreme Nature.
Percentage.
Huh?
Percentage. You're talking about percentage.
Yes. Narayan is 96%.
What is Radha's God. Percentage?
Huh?
Radharani's percentage.
Radharani is, she's not God. She's the Vladini Shakti. She's as good as God. She is his pleasure potency. She's 100% pleasure potency of the Lord. She is our mother. Krishna is father and Radharani is mother. It's by Radharani's mercy we can approach Krishna because he's a very big man. You can't easily approach a big, big man. But Radharani is very soft-hearted, feminine nature. She's easily approachable. So she is our doorway to Krishna. So therefore we worship together, Radha and Krishna. In fact, first we say Hare. Hare is addressing Radharani. First, the feminine energy is addressed. Because the feminine aspect is more easily approachable than the masculine. Masculine aspect, hard and tough aspect, you see. Men are known for being hard and tough. Women are known for being more soft-hearted. That is there originally in Radha and Krishna, you see. She is more soft-hearted. So if we approach our dear mother, Radharani, and beg her mercy, then she will connect us with Krishna. So we worship her as the mercy manifestation of Krishna. The Ladini Shakti. We say Radha Krishna. We don't say Krishna Radha. First we say Radha Krishna, or Sita Ram, Lakshmi Narayan. First we address the feminine potency. Because the feminine potency is more approachable than the masculine potency of God. She's God's feminine potency.
Yeah, you answer Shiva Parvati, they say that for Shiva. Instead of Shiva Parvati, they put Parvati first.
Mm.
And the Shiva
same idea.
The second name of Shiva, right?
Mm. Yes, same idea. Any other questions? Anybody get their question facility stimulated, faculty stimulated? Okay, good.
Going back to demigods, you said it's temporary, but what if we ask demigod to give you strength so that you can pray to Krishna?
That is another thing. That if one asks the demigod to facilitate bhakti, that one can do. The gopis did that. If you read in Krishna book, they're worshipping goddess Katyayani, that we want to have Krishna as our husband. So we ask the demigod to bless you with facility for Krishna's service. That's very good. That's that demigod worship. You're engaging the demigods in Krishna's service. That's a different thing. They are great devotees, actually. So if you ask their blessings for your Krishna bhakti, then they'll be very pleased with you, actually, for them. So that you can do.
Could you please tell us more about Dhruva Maharaj's story? Dhruva Maharaj's story?
What about it?
Could you please tell more about Dhruva Maharaj?
The boys went away. Why are they not here? I want them to hear them. Why are they not here?
They had to
go. I'm glad I focus on them a little bit. I wanted to give them a strong. See, I can notice when somebody's mind is going away. I saw this boy; his mind was going away. He started playing with the cartels. That's why I started preaching to him. I know what's going on in your minds just by looking at your faces. I can see when somebody is, they're flying away a million miles away from this lecture. I could saw he was going away, and I wanted to bring him back. I wanted to have mercy on these boys and bring them. I see he was going away. I could see in his mind was going away.
They followed the parents.
Huh?
They followed the parents.
The parents took them away.
Yeah, for his father's birthday.
Yeah, the parents took them away.
Yes, so the parents needs to be educated.
That's why I took the opportunity when I had a chance to educate, to really give them some powerful education. Yeah, what can I say? The parents take away. The parents don't understand. They don't realize here's a spiritual master, a representative of Srila Prabhupada speaking. This is the greatest opportunity my son has gotten in a long time. They don't realize it. They don't realize it, you see. So this is the frustration of being a preacher of Krishna consciousness. We realize we have the message which will save the whole world, but people, they're not interested. It's like being on the Titanic and going around and warning all the people the boat is sinking, get in the lifeboat, and people look at you. You're crazy, this boat will never sink. He said, but no, the boat's sinking. Please get in the lifeboat. No, come on, this must be a hoax. The Titanic is an unsinkable boat. Everyone knows that. So this is the frustration of being a preacher sometimes. We try to tell people how important this is and think, oh, thank you, Swamiji. Now we have to go to a birthday party or something. You know, they don't realize how important this is. They don't realize it. And it just, we spend so much time and energy to travel all the way. We've come all the way from South America just to come here and give a few talks here in Southern California. And, you know, spending so much money and so much strain in our bodies, sitting on the plane all those long hours. And then they just, you know, a few minutes and they're gone. So it's a frustration we experience, you see. It breaks my heart to see these things. But our duty is, we're servants of Krishna, that's all. Our duty is to keep planting the seeds of bhakti. And as many seeds as we can plant until finally Krishna calls us back to his abode. As long as I'm here until my last dying breath, I'm going to keep planting the seeds of bhakti. And anybody who's fortunate enough to come into hearing this message, I'm going to keep planting the seeds of bhakti. So anyway, Dhruva, as soon as you said Dhruva, I felt bad because I saw the boys were gone. I felt really bad. I felt really bad because he was a boy who came to a very profound realization that, you know, having a material kingdom, I wish they were here. Having a material kingdom was just like, you know, going after a broken beer bottle out in the street here, you know. This is worthless. A worthless endeavor. When he finally, by all those austerities and penances he executed, he was finally able to see Vishnu. He was just really, he realized what a fool I was. I want to have a kingdom of this world. I should have been simply seeking God's blessings to become a devotee. But I had some material desire. But the irony was that now he's seen God. He wants nothing but to serve the Lord. And I said, okay, now here's the kingdom. Now you have a duty to rule this kingdom. He had to stay and rule the kingdom that he had desired. He didn't even want it anymore, but now he had to do that. He was given a position of lordship within this material world. But now he didn't even want it, but now he had to do it as his duty. Because he had wanted it, he had asked for it. Now, okay, you asked for it, now you got it. But I don't really want it now, but now you go ahead and do it because you wanted it. So actually the smart thing is never desire things that are not ultimately beneficial. Because then you may be stuck with some obligation you'd rather not have to do. The best thing is simply pray for pure bhakti. And what is the ideal prayer for doing that? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If you simply pray for pure devotion, You'll never go wrong. I guarantee you, you will never go wrong. You may say, what about my money, my income, my this, my that, but Krishna will give you everything. If you focus on pure bhakti, everything else will come. Just like a man walks, his shadow follows him. Your material needs are the shadow of your spiritual needs. If you see that your spiritual needs are being met, your material needs will not be a problem for you. Ananya shintayantamam yejana prayapasate tesham nityabhyuktanam yogachemam baham yaham. Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, text number 22. For those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. And Prabhupada elaborated on that verse. He says, Krishna will personally deliver to your door whatever you need. If you have only one love, and that's him. You may say, I'm a devotee, but why Krishna is not delivering to my door? Well, there's two kinds of devotees. There's impure devotees and pure devotees. The pure devotee, he has one love only, and that's Krishna. The impure devotee, he loves Krishna and he loves Maya too. He's trying to sort it all out still. You see, I love Maya and I love Krishna both. So Krishna doesn't reciprocate him in the same way as he does with the pure devotee who exclusively loves him. For that devotee exclusively loves him, Krishna personally gives him everything. It's not a simile. That devotee who's completely pure, he can actually see Krishna at every minute. Krishna is actually present with him at every minute. He's never separated from Krishna. Just like Brahmaji states, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena Santaksa Daiva Hridayesha Valokayanti Yang Shama Shundar Machintya Ganasvarupam Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. For those who anoint their eyes with the ointment of love of God, I become fully manifest as Sham Sundar within the heart. And I appear externally also, the Lord said. So for those who become completely pure, they're actually having direct contact with Krishna and direct, constant, personal loving exchange with Krishna at every minute. And he's giving them whatever they need. Krishna is personally giving them whatever they need. So if you want to come to that position, all you have to do is take up this process seriously. Take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, get initiated by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master. This is what Rupa Goswami says are the three important items for developing Krishna Bhakti. Take shelter of Guru, get initiated by Guru, and follow the orders of Guru. So any more questions? Yeah.
Why this whole material world was created?
Hmm?
Why this material world was created?
For you. Because you wanted to try what it would be like to be God. You wanted to try what it would be like to have a world where I was the center. So God gave you a place where you could do that. You could try it, see what it was like, see if you liked it. Because we wanted it. That's why it's here. The Prabhupada gives an example. A little girl, she looks one night, she looks out the window of her bedroom window. She looks up at the moon. And it's so beautiful, that moon. She says, Mommy, Mommy, I want it. And what can the mother give the child the moon? Is it possible for the mother to give the child the moon? No. But the child so much wants the moon, and the affectionate mother wants to satisfy the daughter. So what does she do? She gives the daughter a mirror in the hand. And in the mirror there is the reflection of the moon. The daughter thinks, my mother loves me so much, now she has given me the moon. Now it is mine. So this world is just like that reflection of the moon in the mirror. That's all it is. It's that reflection of the moon in the mirror. Because you wanted to have that moon that Krishna has given you. Listen. This world where you can think you are the center. He's given it to you. Because you're his affectionate daughter. You had that strong desire. All right, my dear daughter, I give you this because you wanted it. That's the Lord's mercy. He gave you a world, the world that you wanted. Even though it was a foolish desire. I'm not picking on you. We're all in the same boat. I'm using you as an example because you're the one who asked the question. But we're all in the same boat. We all desire to have a world where we thought we were the center. And that's why we're here. And Krishna kindly gave us the illusion as out of affection. As a father, we wanted it very strongly. He says, all right, go ahead and play with this toy for a while until you get tired of it. Then you can lay down the mirror and come back to being my devotee again. So now we're playing with a mirror, realizing it's not much fun, really. We thought it would be really fun to play with this mirror in the hand, but now we're realizing there's nothing really there. There's no substance to it. So now let's lay down the mirror and go back to being Krishna's devotees again. It's just like a mirror. It's a mirror of the spiritual world. It's not. It has a reality, but it's no more real than the reflection. When you become a pure devotee, then the curtain comes back, and you'll see the actual reality behind the curtain, the spiritual existence. This is a covered reality we're seeing right now. It's kind of like Hollywood. This is the Hollywood reality right now. Or Bollywood. If you're from India, we can say Bollywood. This is the Bollywood existence, you see. Cinema, it's like superficial. It's not. It looks real on the screen, but if you go to it, you see it's just a movie set. If you actually see when they filmed it, it's just a movie set. It's not really a town like it looked like in the movie. It's just a movie set. So this is not really the real reality. It's just a movie set here. And when you finally wake up and realize it's only a movie set, and you'll realize the real reality is beyond the movie set of this material existence, and that is with Krishna. You wanted it, you got it. Don't blame God. You have an illusory world, a mirror, you have an illusory moon in your hand, you wanted it, and he gave it to you. That's his love, his kindness for his affectionate daughter. Huh?
So what is the solution? Do we want to get out or do we want to remain?
That's up to you. If you want to remain like a child and keep playing with that mirror, Krishna will let you do that for millions of lifetimes if you want. But if you realize, what is this nonsense? This isn't the real moon anyway. I want the real thing. I don't want some imitation thing. Then Krishna is ready. Okay, I'll give you a spiritual master. I'll get you out of here when you're ready. That's it. Any other questions? Yeah.
Does while moving and non-moving have Atma and Paramatma, right? Moving and non-moving. Entities. They have a...
Actually, both of them move.
All moving and non-moving.
They both, with every change of your body, the Paramatma and the Atma both move.
But I'm talking about non-moving animals. They have a soul. They have a soul and super soul, right?
Every single jiva, the super soul is there accompanying every single jiva. Whether he's a human being or even a worm or whatever he may be, the super soul is going along with him through all those bodies. That's right.
But they have conscious. Conscious means they are moving, that means they have conscious.
Huh?
If the animal is moving, they have conscious, but no intelligence. Is that true?
Actually, it doesn't matter if they're moving or they're stationary. Consciousness is there, like in a plant. A plant also has consciousness. Have you ever seen how, when I was a Boy Scout, we went camping in the woods. I remember I saw certain trees. They grew up in an area where there was no sunshine. Somehow the seed had gotten planted in an area that was totally shaded by big trees. And it was amazing. Like 50 yards away, there was an open patch. And this tree grew like this. It finally found the sun and then went up. The tree went out. The tree knew where the sun was. It knew which direction to go to get the sun. How you can explain that by physical law? There's a conscious being inside that tree. He knew where the sun was. He knew which direction to go. And the tree actually grew parallel with the ground. And finally, it got to the place where the sunshine was coming regularly, and then it went up. you see, because he knew, why did he go this way instead of that way? He knew exactly which way to go where the sunshine was. Because there's a living entity inside that tree. Anyway, our time is running out. No, this will be the last question.
Last question. Is this question telling my mind about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? In Gita, how Krishna, Lord Krishna says, Yada Yada Dharmashya Glani Bhartya. So whenever there is destruction, then only he will come, or then only he will appear. Then why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came 500 years back? Was it really bad?
The situation was very bad at that time. That's what, actually, he came because Adaitacharya was begging him to come. It was very, very bad. The Smarta Brahmins, the Mayavadis, the Navadvipa was the center of, was the Oxford of Indri at that time. It was the center of higher education. It was completely polluted with Smartaism and Vayavadi philosophy and everything. It was completely polluted. The Vaishnavas were having a very difficult time. Because all of this ritualism and, even though the Muslims had the political power, still the Hindu community was going on, allowed to continue under the guidance of the Brahmin class, but the Brahmins were completely materialistic. They're the ones who wanted to stop the Sankirtan movement.
Shankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy.
That's the point. Yeah, that's the real point. You see, when Lord Krishna departed, and gradually Indian culture degraded so much, they were killing cows in the name of Vedas, misquoting the sacrifices from the Treta Yuga as cow killing, when actually they were cow rejuvenation sacrifices. So Krishna sent Shankaracharya. Actually, he appeared as Lord Buddha, first of all, to put a stop to the cow killing. Then he appeared as Shankaracharya to defeat Buddhism and bring back in a modified version of Vedic culture, which is an impersonal version, which was close to Buddhism. And then he sent a number of Vaishnava Acharyas to pave the way for the full-blown manifestation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. Because now, still today, it's a big debate in South India between Dvaita and Advaita. It's Dvaita. No, it's Advaita. No, it's Dvaita. Even Prabhupada went to South India, the newspaper reporter said, "Are you Dvaita or Advaita?" It's a big thing. So, but Lord Chaitanya, he said, no, the absolute truth is simultaneously Dvaita and Advaita. Simultaneously, both things. So Lord Chaitanya actually he brought the full blown Vedic philosophy back to India, which had, from the previous yuga, had been disappeared after Krishna left. So it was a very important thing. When Krishna left, India went into philosophical no man's land. Buddhism drove the Vedic culture out. Shankaracharya brought in a modified version of the Vedic culture that was close to Buddhism. But now then Krishna had to send a number of Vaishnava Acharyas before he personally came as Chaitanya to bring back the full-blown understanding that was there in the previous times. So it's a very important thing, Lord Chaitanya's coming. It was very necessary because Mayavadi philosophy was very predominant. Look at Prakashananda Sarasvati, there was 30,000 disciples. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the court pandit in the Fatimata Pratap Parudra Maharaj's court. He was a Mayavadi philosopher. The Mayavadis had taken over the whole scene in India. Mayavadi philosophy. And some influence of Ramanujacharya was there. They were making some inroads. Lord Chaitanya took that and brought it to perfection. So it was very essential that he came at that time. So we're very happy to have gotten this opportunity to be with you all tonight. I have worship we have to do early in the morning tomorrow. So we have to get back to our ashram.
What is going to be subject tomorrow? What is going to be subject tomorrow of your lecture at LA Temple?
Tomorrow I'll be giving a lecture, the Sunday Feast lecture at the temple.
What would be the topic?
Have they advertised the topic?
No.
No one has told me what the topic
is. He comes by the temple, the Krishna Prema. So he knows.
Is there somebody that assigns? Is it an assigned topic or it's my choice?
Yes.
I didn't tell me. They just told me I'm giving the lecture. This morning I told me I had a topic. I said you have to speak on this particular verse, and you have to. Today there was a leading scholar in the world came from my lecture. Who was the director of the department of world religions in the Harvard Divinity School. He attended my lecture today. I made a very good friendship with the learned professor. So I was given a targeted approach for today, but Sunday they didn't tell me anything. So I assume it's an open topic. I'll pick something from the Bhagavad Gita. What is it?
Tomorrow you'll have to see parties there, but they want first, and then if not, then you pick something.
Yeah, they may ask me to speak on a specific verse. They haven't informed me. Usually it's an open choice for the speaker in the Sunday feast lecture. What I do is I look at the audience and I try to read their minds and see what they need. I try to, just like the doctor analyzes the patient and he gives the medicine. When all the patients assemble, I'll try to figure out what's the best medicine. Depending on, the whole idea is I want to connect with the audience. The needs of spirit, but the best way I can encourage and enthuse the assembled audience there to advance in Krishna consciousness. That's what I'm going to do tomorrow. Whatever topic will best enliven them to take up pure devotional service, because ultimately pure devotional service is the real point of our movement. Everything is for that point.
You have to prepare in advance.
I've been preparing for the last 40 years, Prabhu. I'm well prepared for the lecture. I've been prepared for the last 40 years. Sometimes I just go to the lecture and I sit down in some advertised lecture on a topic. I sit down and say, "Oh, yes, what is my lecture tonight?" They say, "Oh, you're lecturing this." And I just need to know what the topic was, and I just start talking. Because I've been doing this for 40 years. Even when I was a new bhakta, I was a brand new, uninitiated devotee, and they sent me to appear on television all by myself. A 23-year-old kid said, "Now go to the television station." And a live TV appearance. So somehow Krishna has given me some ability by Prabhupada's mercy that I can speak. So
I heard that Krishna empowers you whenever you...
Huh?
Krishna empowers...
It's all Prabhupada's mercy, because I have no qualification of my own. But Prabhupada has kindly, I just beg for his mercy that I can speak some words that will be appropriate to help the people to become enlivened and enthused in their spiritual lives. And Krishna always answers my prayer. He always answers my prayer. I remember one Sunday in the Fiji Islands, I've been very tired. I took a nap in the middle of the afternoon. You know how it is waking up from a nap in the middle of the afternoon? Sometimes you feel kind of disoriented. A mid-afternoon nap. And they said, "Wake up, it's time to go give the lecture." Oh, and I was feeling disoriented. And I said, "Lord Nisringadev," it was Lord Nisringadev's appearance day. So I said, "Lord Nisringadev, I feel no qualification. Would you please bless me? I can speak some words," and the audience was super enlivened. So it was Lord Nisringadev's mercy. So I'm just depending on Prabhupada and Lord Krishna and all circumstances that I can speak in such a way to enliven the people to take up pure devotional service as their only duty in life. The other things, you should dovetail all of them into pure bhakti. Your education, your family life, your career, your social life, you dovetail all of it into pure bhakti, and I guarantee you, you're going to have one heck of a happy life. One heck of a happy life. So we'll stop here.